On day hung.
The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on June 16, 2001 in London.
Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha.
I'd like to thank His Holiness Shivaram Maharaj for giving me the opportunity to have the association of all of you today. I must confess I am completely unprepared for this presentation. We have much research that is compiled on this subject, but it is all in Bombay. So today, with your permission, just spontaneously I'll speak something about the concepts of what we've tried to do at our temple in Bombay. I may not be able to speak on so many of the details. Prabhupada named his mission the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He wanted us to practice Krishna consciousness as a society. It is not a group of bhajananandis who have their own personal private worship. He wanted to conquer the world with spiritual Krishna conscious culture. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness, at least in its basics, has been quite well understood. Millions and millions of Srila Prabhupada's books have been distributed throughout the world, which is the pure essence of the philosophy of the Vedas. At one time, Srila Prabhupada said, "We have enough devotees now. Now we should boil the milk." Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. Which really meant, as far as many of us understand, that Srila Prabhupada wanted the devotees to really develop the true qualities of a Vaishnava. Prabhupada also said at one time that half of his mission had been fulfilled. Build temples, to give his disciples places to live and to worship in the holy places of Mayapur and Vrindavan. All of his writings were published, being distributed in mass. He said the second half of his mission was to establish Varnashram Dharma, or Daibi Varnashram Dharma, which is the spiritual culture of Krishna consciousness. Because unless devotees have a culture around them, it is very difficult for them to sustain their sadhana and their pure devotional principles. By an inconceivable arrangement, which I will not go into any details, I ended up in Bombay in 1987. And was asked to start some preaching. So we began a small temple. The entire facility of the temple was less than half the size of this room. It was really like a ghetto scene, infested with rats. Once we bought a cat who was supposed to be expert at catching rats. We put him in the room, and the next morning when we came in, we saw rats everywhere, but there was no cat. We searched everywhere, and we found in one of the rafters on the ceiling, the cat was trembling in fear, because all the rats were bigger than him. It was a simple beginning. Somebody gave us some little plaster-made deities of Krishna and Radharani about this big, and after a couple of days of dressing them, Krishna's arm broke off. And a few brahmacharis that were there, they came from other temples. They were highly untrained. Gossip. They would get in arguments, fist fights. It was really horrible. I wasn't even allowed to give class there. The brahmacharis wouldn't let me give class because the president considered me a threat because I had a higher position. So I was a sannyasi. And there ended up being scandals between some of the brahmacharis and the children of the congregation. Anything we would ever collect, the brahmacharis would steal it, sell it, and then send the money back to their villages. So it was horrible. And there ended up literally a war between the few members of the congregation, maybe 10 families, and the 5 or 6 brahmacharis, to the point that they were about to go to court to battle it out. Hare Krishna. At that time, because I was asked to take the responsibility of that place, I began to think, what does Srila Prabhupada really want and how to do it? So I reflected about many of my experiences and what I had seen over the years in Srila Prabhupada's society. In particular, New Vrindavan. New Vrindavan began a very simple community, just a few devotees, a lot of mud, one cow who was blind in one eye. That's how New Vrindavan began. But somehow or other, there was very good leadership. Srila Prabhupada really emphasized how much he wanted that project to develop, and it really developed. From a little plot of land, it became over 5,000 acres of land. Beautiful deities, magnificent Pushpa Samadhi of Prabhupada was built, Prabhupada's palace. There were tens, sometimes hundreds and thousands of people from all over America and the world coming there to visit, to hear about Prabhupada, to see Srila Prabhupada's darshan. There was temples, guest houses, restaurants, the largest dairy farm in the entire state of West Virginia, giving approximately 2 tons, 4,000 pounds of milk a day. All computerized milking machines. It was flourishing. About 700 full-time devotees, including children. And the way the system was created was everything was very much project-oriented. The grihastas, generally the woman would go out to collect in one party, the man would go out to collect another party. The children were in a gurukul. The gurukul was staffed with the least qualified people in the community often. Qualification to be a gurukul teacher was you were not able to collect money and you weren't able to do construction. Hare Krishna. Those were the priorities. Grihastas didn't get paid anything. They just live with what the temple gave them and gave everything they had to the temple. The brahmacharis, they were just pushed and pushed and pushed to work. If you got caught reading, you were considered in Maya. It was a workforce. either collecting money or building. Anyways, devotees were very enthused. They were empowered for some time. But then what happened is after maybe 10, 12 years, practically every family was utterly dysfunctional. Brahmacharis, not a single one of them lasted in that type of service arena. So they became grihasthas, or they just left. Things started really falling apart. Then the community told the grihasthas, we can't pay you anything anymore. They came as a brahmachari. Now they have a wife with 3 to 5 children. And they don't have a house. They have to pay rent now. They don't have food. They have to pay for the food. Nothing came free from the temple. They felt, many of them, cheated, that they gave the best years of their life, surrendering with all good motives, trusting the leadership, and now they see that their life is in shambles. And of course, the leadership just told them that this is Maya, you should depend on Krishna. Anyways, it ended up that New Vrindavan, which was flourishing, with literally tens of millions of dollars in bank accounts, became totally bereft of anything. To the point where it had about 10 or 11 full-time devotees. The rest of the community basically wanted nothing to do with the temple. They were just struggling for economic survival. The leader's gone. The community is practically bankrupt. No money. The government doesn't allow us to collect the way we used to. So there's no source of income. And many, many bitter people. So I was analyzing this. That when we're project-oriented, but not people-oriented, this is what often takes place. And I traveled around America. It may be so for Europe also. And saw some of our biggest, best temples. We're distributing hundreds and thousands of books a year with 150 devotees in the temple. And now there's 5 or 6 full-time devotees in the temple. And they're just struggling just to try to maintain the building. So I began to think that if we want a future in our society, we really have, as leaders, we have to make every possible plan to protect, sustain, and enliven the devotees on every possible level. In Bombay, I saw that the grihasthas wouldn't even come, because they thought the brahmacharis were just useless bums. And what is really the purpose of the renounced order? According to our Vaishnava culture, which is revealed so beautifully in Srila Prabhupada's book, the renounced order is meant to give the highest standards to the grihasthas so that they have something to trust and to strive for in the spirit of renunciation and devotion. They should be sadhus. So somehow or other, it was a gradual process. but we removed all of these so-called brahmacharis, one or two at a time, and we're left with just one or two very new people. But we were thinking that we should train them in such a way that they can really give dignity to Prabhupada's mission. And like things attract people with like minds. If we have a low standard, people who want something cheap will be very much attracted. If we have a very high standard, people who really want something great are going to be attracted. It is surprising how many people want something great. How many people could be coming to our temples if they really took our standards seriously? But oftentimes those types of people come. They read Prabhupada's books. They come to our temple. They spend a little time. They see what type of people they'd have to live with and so forth. And they just back off and they don't say anything to anyone. And we don't know that we've lost them. How many times that may have happened in our society throughout the world. So we studied the concept of brahmachari from Srila Prabhupada's books and really wanted to have a brahmachari ashram like that. We were thinking at the beginning of the movement, we just had to establish Krishna conscious society so we would take whoever we could get, however we could get, whenever we could get, wherever we could get. The Prabhupada told us to boil the milk. He wanted to establish Varnashram culture. He wanted things to be of high quality. So it was sort of a risk, but we tried to live by that principle. And what we found is brahmacharis are supposed to be studying the scriptures under their gurus. They're supposed to be very simple, not proprietors of anything. They're supposed to study Brahman, the Vedas, scrutinizingly. They should be surrendered. Prabhupada often uses the example that if the spiritual master doesn't call a brahmachari to eat, the brahmachari doesn't speak a word, he just fasts. He's obedient. This is actually brahmachari life. So we tried to apply those principles and made certain rules for the ashram. If you say no to anything, that day you have to leave the ashram. Put a lot of time and energy into actually training the brahmacharis to be preachers, book distributors, really know the philosophy, present the philosophy, to actually train them to be leaders in every way possible, so that they could go anywhere and lead a community of devotees. Gossiping, rumoring, politics, outlawed. So if anyone comes to join the ashram, we tell them these are the standards. And they're enforced strictly. What we found is gradually the ashram was filling up with people who really wanted that type of life. So much so, because of our lack of space, we do a lot of college preaching. We told them that if you want to join this ashram, you have to actually live like a sadhu. And these are the principles you have to live by. Our own vision of how to best preach there was for the college students, we had them complete their degrees. Because being in college, they were invaluable assets to preach in that college. Then the brahmacharis themselves, the leaders, they decided that after graduating college, they should work in the outside world for at least 6 months to a year, a job, so they'd know what it's like. They have some maturity and experience. So it's about 75 brahmacharis now. And they're all living by these principles. Within the brahmachari ashram, we also have a counselor system where the senior brahmacharis counsel the junior brahmacharis. As far as the congregation, some years back, we were thinking that many of our devotees really feel unloved, unwanted, uncared for, and the leaders don't even know it. Sometimes we assume that everything's very nice, but it's just not like that. So many of my godbrothers and godsisters that I speak to in various parts of the world who are not active within Prabhupada's mission have told us that the reason why they're not is they just don't feel a place within our society. They didn't feel appreciated. They didn't feel cared for. They felt used. They were just used for service, but were not given the love, attention, and that they needed. Now, philosophically, this is a very poor understanding of Krishna consciousness. Because if you're engaged in devotional service, you're not being used. It's a great benediction. But we're dealing with human beings who are not all paramhamsas or even great philosophers. And Srila Prabhupada wanted them to go back to Godhead. Now, I know many of the leaders of our society, especially at New Vrindavan, they felt that if I just push devotees to surrender, because they're engaging in Krishna's service, Krishna's going to protect them. And therefore, he could push devotees to the brink and beyond. Tear apart families for the purpose of productivity. Put children in a compromised situation for productivity. The production was successful, but everything around fell apart. And now even the infrastructure of the construction is falling apart because no one's there to maintain it. The idea was, I'm the leader, I'm Prabhupada's representative. No matter how much I push them, because it's for Prabhupada and Krishna's service, Krishna will protect them. I believe these leaders' motives were good, but perhaps immature. Because as Krishna's representative, the leaders are supposed to protect the devotees on behalf of Krishna. I believe that that element was not properly understood. And it is the duty of every leader who's serving Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet to protect, encourage, and sustain the spiritual lives of each devotee. Because any devotee who comes to this movement is Srila Prabhupada's property. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in one beautiful statement from Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, said that all the wealth of all the planets in the entire universe do not have the value to him as one devotee. How valuable and precious is the Vaishnava? Recently, I was in Ukraine with Niranjan Maharaj, and I saw all these ecstatic, wonderful devotees, just with so much faith, with so much trust, dancing and chanting and surrendering to everything. It was a beautiful scene. It was refreshing to the heart. And we were having a talk, and I was thinking, there were temples in America some years ago where I saw the same kind of devotees. But so many now are bitter. So many have turned against our movement. So many feel cheated. That should not happen to these devotees. And it's our responsibility as leaders that it doesn't. So essentially, when we came to developing our project in Bombay, we just decided on a particular vision that we were going to model all projects and all principles around. And that vision was, what will it take for each and every particular devotee to be enlivened, inspired, and protected so that they could practice Krishna consciousness, actively serving Prabhupada's movement, till the day they die. Thinking of each devotee not in terms of what do we have to get done for the temple today, that we have to think about. But more important is what is required to keep this devotee stable in devotional service for the next 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, till they die. How to ensure that each and every devotee knows that someone really cares about them and is willing to help them. So we established what we called a counselor system. At that time, within the congregation, it was quite small. We took four of the senior-most of the grihastas and asked them if they would teach and guide and encourage a certain amount of families each. Each one had about four or five families under them. And I personally tried to instruct them of, you know, what they should be doing in a very simple way. So they began, and I came to America. When I returned to India, I asked how the counselor system was going, and they all forgot about it. It wasn't going. It didn't exist. So I said, no, this is very, very important. We should begin it again. So we established it again, same counselor, same counselees. And I went to America after some months, and when I came back, it wasn't actually finished, but it just wasn't happening. They were saying, well, do we really need something like this? And there's not really that much interest in the counselees. Sometimes they don't come, so we get discouraged and we don't want to do it. So again, we emphasized. It practically stopped three times. Then I put so much emphasis that they understood maybe this is important. So despite all obstacles, all disappointments, they continued on. And soon we had a wonderful congregation of grihastas who were really, really feeling united. Every grihasta in the congregation was feeling that there is someone that specifically is caring about them and concerned with the spiritual welfare of their families. We specifically separated the counselor system from management. In the sense, today the counselor system, the counselors make most of the managerial decisions for the temple and for the outreach. However, their relationship with their counselees has nothing or little to do with management. Because the tendency is that devotees think that he's telling me this because he wants to get me to do something. But is this really what he means? Is this really what's best for my spiritual life? So the purpose of the counselor is specifically to cultivate that person's spiritual life. In this way, the counselor practically adopts other families and takes responsibility like a shiksha guru for that family. Amongst the grihasthas, the counselors are generally husband and wife teams. The wife encourages, teaches, gives guidance and training to the women and the female children, and the husband for the males. The counselors meet their counselees twice a week. There's a specific format to encourage the people to really read Srila Prabhupada's books, understand proper Vaishnava culture, etiquette, behavior. They have nice kirtans together. And besides the meetings, the counselors are always in contact with their counselees on an individual and personal level to help them. Because it's amazing that very few people who are married know what it means to be a grihastha. Grihastha doesn't mean you're just married and you have tilak. The grihastha ashram is a culture. There's rules. There's standards. How to raise children in Krishna consciousness. How a husband is supposed to deal with the wife, how the wife is supposed to deal with the husband, how you're supposed to deal with in-laws, how you're supposed to balance your economic side of life to your spiritual side of life, how to follow certain regulative principles within the grihastha ashram, how to overcome the obstacles that come every day. Oftentimes in our society, there are divorces which could have easily been overcome if people just knew what they were supposed to do under certain circumstances. There are many misconceptions of what Krishna conscious married life is. And some of those misconceptions may have even become traditions within our society. That's how this world works. If a deviation is followed by enough people, it becomes a tradition. And that becomes the standard you're supposed to live by. So these counselors, they really try to come together once a month during their meetings to establish how they're going to teach their counselees. And they discuss amongst themselves the problems that different counselees are facing. The beginning of the counselor's program, which is once a month, is purely spiritual. There's kirtan. One of the counselors spends the whole month preparing for his presentation, different counselors have to make presentations on the qualities of devotees, on certain aspects of Srila Prabhupada's philosophy, on Vaishnava etiquette, on principles of sadhana. And these presentations are very, very well researched and presented, and all the counselors present are taking notes, and then they present the research that this one counselor has done to their counselees and train them accordingly. So they actually have something very substantial to discuss in their meetings. What we found is after some time, there was such a loving environment amongst the counselors and amongst the counselees with each other and with the counselees of other counselors. It became like a big, big family of devotees. Recently, Jananivas Prabhu from Mayapur came to our temple, and he was explaining how in the spiritual world, it's really just family life. Goloka Vrindavan is a big family of gopas and gopis, such a family environment, and that this is the way our society should be. Be a family. There's the brahmacharis, the grihasthas, the vanaprasthas, the sannyasis. It's a family of devotees who are working together for a common purpose, to help each other, to be strong, to serve Srila Prabhupada and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We put great emphasis on this principle. Whatever leaders emphasize, Krishna will empower that to come true. When the leaders emphasize book distribution, hundreds of millions of books distributed. When the leaders emphasize temple construction, we see throughout the world gorgeous temples, magnificent temples, costing millions of dollars being constructed. When we emphasize food for life, millions of plates of prasad are going out. For all these projects to be sustained, our resource is the enthusiasm of the devotees. In America, there are many temples in some of the most important cities, where practically all the services are done by just paying devotees. It's more like a business than a devotional environment. In some of the temples in America, they just import people from Eastern Europe or India and pay them to do the work, because they can't make any devotees in the local level. And they can't keep the people they make unless they pay them. So if we want our projects to really flourish on a long-term basis, we have to sustain the enthusiasm of devotees to continue chanting Hare Krishna and to love to be in the association of devotees. There is nothing as powerful for spreading Krishna consciousness as a satisfied devotee. If a devotee is satisfied with his association, satisfied with his leadership, that devotee will do anything and everything gladly to serve. If devotees feel unappreciated, unprotected, untrained to understand the proper principles of Krishna conscious philosophy, then they will not last. In many temples, it's the new devotees doing most all the service, and the old devotees are just at the sidelines complaining. how does that look to the new devotees? You see, when many of us joined the movement, there was only one person in an older generation in our whole society that was Srila Prabhupada. So we're all young, in our teens or 20s, and we're looking forward and thinking, what am I going to be like in 50 years? Here is the person. Here is a person 75 years old practicing Krishna consciousness. And consciously or subconsciously, we're thinking, when we get old, will be something like this. Maybe not Prabhupada himself, but something following in his footsteps. He was the standard of what an old devotee is who's been practicing Krishna consciousness for many years. We had no other substance to analyze it by. But now, look at what a new devotee sees. Oftentimes, comes to the temple, very convinced by the philosophy, this is perfect. Every question I ever had in life is being answered. Kirtan is so wonderful. Prasad is extraordinary. They love Krishna consciousness. But many intelligent people start thinking, what am I going to be like in 20 years if I follow this process? So they look around and see what the devotees are like who've been following for 20 years. And then they get doubts in the process. Because there's so few examples of people who are still inspired to chant and to dance and to serve the mission. They see people who are bitter, who are complaining, who aren't even practicing anymore, who are seeking other alternatives, either alternatives in various New Age ways of trying to find enlightenment. There are different psychological, analytic ways of trying to be a whole person, or different religions, or different branches of Vaishnavism. It is somewhat confusing and disheartening for new people to see all this. And what are they going to be like? And if they get married, how are they going to maintain their Krishna consciousness? They're going to analyze that by seeing their predecessors. Somehow or other, what's done is done, but it doesn't always have to be that way. It's not what Prabhupada wanted. So we should try with all of our might to appreciate, enlighten, and enliven those devotees who have given so many of the years of their life, and try to attract them back in a very favorable way to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission in some capacity or another. I believe Prabhupada would really want us to do that. Devotees gave so many years, the best years of their lives, to serve him. They should feel appreciated and encouraged. And how successful we are, time will tell. But at least the new people that come now, we should train them, we should care for them, we should guide them in such a way that as they get older, they become deeper, more mature, with a higher taste for Krishna consciousness. It shouldn't be that people come with a higher taste and they burn out and they just look back how wonderful it was 25 years ago when I was distributing books. 25 years later, devotees should be thinking, they should be realized. They should be very deeply connected. They should feel strong responsibilities to Prabhupada's family. That is what a culture is meant to create. And if we just give people what Prabhupada gave us, that's the type of culture we will have. So in my honest opinion, there's different ways of going about creating a counselor system or bhakti briksha system, whatever it may be called, mentor system. And according to time, place, and circumstance, there may be different ways in which it can be executed. But the most important thing that will make it either work or not work is that the leadership must have this conviction that my first and foremost responsibility for Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas is to manage, direct those persons who are under my care in such a way that they will remain enthused to be Krishna conscious throughout their entire lives. We have to think into the future. Shivaram Maharaj, you were not present when I explained when we first started the counselor system with four counselors, each one with a few families under them in the congregation. It was very enthusiastic at the beginning, but people didn't come to meetings and the counselors had so many other things to do. So when I would come back from America, I'd ask, how is it going? And they'd say, well, it really doesn't work. Do we really have to do this? Is it important? So we revived it. It went down to practically nothing three different times. Because nothing good happens easy. Until finally we pushed it so much that they had to take it seriously. And once it actually got going, the momentum became so transcendently powerful that now I could say the counselor system is the basis of our entire preaching, the basis of our entire family of devotees. It's created such incredible amount of unity, harmony, caring, and spiritual training for everyone, without exception. And the leader could know through this system that every single person is being cared for, is being educated in Krishna consciousness. At this time, there's literally thousands of people in the counselor system. There's about, in the congregation, there's 45 counselors now, each one with about 20 families under them. And some of the counselors, one particular counselor has a couple hundred counselees and has divided assistant counselors under him. Most of the counselors have assistant counselors, and gradually those assistant counselors become counselors. And the result is that just a new person comes and sees what a high quality of spirituality the grihasthas are getting. They also see such a very loving, caring family environment amongst each other that they're very much attracted to practically immediately want to commit themselves to this movement. We give lectures in the temple, we distribute books. To really change people's hearts, it's often very important that they see Krishna consciousness in action on a cultural and social level. His Holiness Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj, he often speaks about the importance of Krishna conscious culture. He says that our philosophy is like the product, and the culture is like the packaging. If you don't have the proper packaging, the product will not be protected, nor will it even look attractive. Srila Prabhupada did say that we will conquer the world by Krishna conscious culture. That doesn't mean just exhibits and dairams and art and dramas. That's there, that's a very essential part of culture. But also how people, Vaishnava etiquette, how devotees relate to one another, how devotees care for one another, how devotees harmonize for Krishna. Radha Gopinath Temple, we believe that if devotees develop a spirit of humility, understanding that nothing will please the Supreme Personality of Godhead very much unless we do it in the spirit of the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. Prabhupada emphasizes this principle again and again in his writings and his lectures. To serve Vaishnavas. And the Yuga Dharma is the chanting of the holy names. We must have a very, very enthusiastic taste for chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And hearing the pastimes, the teachings of the glories of Krishna. Hearing and chanting, serving Vaishnavas, and sharing this great gift with the conditioned souls is the basis of our movement. When devotees are united, well cared for, well trained, what kind of incredible kirtans they come together to perform. It's simply unbelievable. At one time, it's an inconceivable background of our temple, but we were asked, we came back into ISKCON, and we were asked, why aren't you distributing Prabhupada's books? We weren't allowed to buy them, that's the reason. But now they were giving us Prabhupada's books. So, we just had a meeting after the Sunday program that really this is what we've always wanted to do. This is what Prabhupada wants. We should unite with all enthusiasm to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. Everybody, let's... The December marathon is about to begin. When we spoke these words, just one short class, it was like putting a match on a keg of dynamite. All of a sudden, because they were so united, so harmonious, and so enthusiastic to serve Prabhupada, the congregation and the brahmacharya got together, organized book distribution. We came in third in the entire world, after Bombay and Mayapur, in book distribution. In 1 month, they distributed 60,000 hardback Bhagavad Gitas. And the leading book distributor was a mother with 3 children who lived outside the temple. Name is Madhu Priya. And the women were having women parties, and the men were having men parties, and different people who had companies, they were giving trucks to move the books from place to place. And really, it was a wonderful project. And the next year, for the December marathon, we became in first place for the whole world. So, what that showed us is if devotees are united and well-trained, then all of these other projects will naturally flourish. The congregation became so very much inspired that the brahmacharis don't have to collect one penny. The congregation maintains everything for the temple. The brahmacharis, they just want to see the brahmacharis good sadhus. The congregation comes to the temple just to associate with the brahmacharis, because they're taught the philosophy very nicely, because they're living very simple lives, renounced lives. They want to come and hear from them, associate with them, invite them to their homes. And they want to support them in every possible way. The brahmacharis, after the morning program, there's from 11 o'clock till 1, from 11 till 1, there's a brahmachari class where they're trained in philosophy, etiquette, culture, and they're trained to be preachers. And then after that, they take lunch and they either go out in book distribution or go out and preach. I believe there's 30 colleges that have weekly programs now. And then we also were asked to take charge of the Pune temple. So there's another 25 colleges. There's 45 brahmacharis in Pune now. They live by the same principles. So, and we really try to train the brahmacharis in such a way, knowing that many of them will get married. That's the way the world is. We train them, we try to train them in such a way that they have the type of responsibilities and adhikar by which, if they have the capacity to remain brahmacharis, they'll be fully engaged and satisfied throughout their lives. That's what we're striving to create within them. And if they have to get married, then they can very graciously enter into the Grihastha ashram and feel complete support by both the brahmacharis and the congregation. When a brahmachari has to get married, we try to teach the brahmacharis the maturity to understand that if he's been a good brahmachari all these years, he's a success. In Srila Prabhupada's books, it describes a person as a brahmachari till 25, then they get married. Then the next 25 years in Grihastha, then they become vanaprasthas. That's the general standard. So therefore, to train a brahmachari, it's a success if you train that person to be Krishna conscious and then can be an exemplary Grihastha. That's one of the successes of the brahmachari ashram. So if a brahmachari wants to get married, the brahmacharis actually have a special function to congratulate them and give them all support and encouragement, that we're your brothers, we're always here for you. Then the congregation goes through every possible effort to help establish that person in a proper Grihastha ashram. Help them for their economic situation, help them with housing, whatever's necessary. They really try to go out of their way, because that person gave 7, 8, 10 years of their lives serving in the ashram. They shouldn't just be out in the street. So this type of cooperation creates faith and confidence in devotees that the leadership is really concerned with their future. One devotee, old man in our congregation, is actually a school teacher, retired, not very wealthy, had a heart attack, needed immediate bypass surgery, had no money to do it, just had enough money to sustain himself and his family. So the congregation, one announcement was made, and they collected enough for his surgery. Now, not only did that person, it ended up the person didn't even need surgery, so we gave the money back. But what was accomplished through that is everybody saw that if I surrender to this movement, this is what kind of a family support system we have. And just about 2 months ago, one of our devotees, who's actually one of the counselors, He worked for the railways all his life, not much money. He needed a bypass surgery. And the congregation came together and paid for it. And these types of situations really, really give the spirit that we are a family. Prabhupada created a family environment in Krishna consciousness. And people who are honestly and earnestly dedicated to the mission, they're our family. And in any family, you know your family members are going to be with you through the ups and downs of life. You have faith in them. Sometimes devotees, as they grow older, they know my mother and father, they'll never leave me cold on the street. But the devotees, I don't know what they'll do if things come to that position. We should have more faith, more confidence in the representatives of Srila Prabhupada than we do for our material relatives. When we have that kind of spirit in people's hearts, then we have a strong society, a strong culture. And everything begins to flourish. Once people are united and Krishna conscious and taking seriously the chanting of the holy names, then it just becomes like a dynamic force that's practically unstoppable. Yes, we have faith that the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and the chanting of the holy names is all we really need with the association of devotees. However, as preachers, we must know that unless there's a society and culture to support people, they'll lose their faith in the chanting of the holy names. They'll lose their faith in the association of devotees. So we have to keep people strong, keep people chanting, keep people doing their sadhana. In the congregation of Radha Gopinath Temple, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of families that are chanting 16 rounds, following the principles very nicely, doing deity worship at home, coming to the temple. All the cooking for the deities, 6 offerings a day, is done by the congregation, the Brahman initiated. And they organize it amongst themselves. Some of the women counselors and wives of the husbands, they have taken charge of that. And they have people standing in line to cook an offering. 3 days a week, the congregation in the morning does all the deity worship. Complete responsibility. They manage, they organize, they do everything. Every Sunday, I believe 4 or 5 teams of counselors come together to cook the Sunday feast every Sunday. I think it's rotation. Once every 6 weeks, a team of counselors and counselees come to, they rotate like that. And the Sunday feast is about 2,000 people. They do all the cutting, all the organizing, all the ordering of bhoga, everything, cooking. And they love to do it. They feel so integrally a part of our temple. The deities are their deities. When people feel a responsibility, they feel such a deep connection, they're enlivened. That association gives people enthusiasm to do their sadhana very, very attentively. And to preach to others what a wonderful process Krishna consciousness is. So it's quite incredible how the congregation is preaching and making more and more and more new people. Just because they're so satisfied. So if we have this perception of what our devotees need, and we as leaders emphasize it, then remarkable things can happen. The counselors divided into different subcommittees. We have a marriage board, which helps to facilitate marriages. The idea is that when a man wants to get married, or a woman wants to get married, they don't go on the prowl, going into the forest of the association of devotees to hunt for some prey, somehow or other. But if you don't have a system, and you have to get married, you have no alternative. So to protect the brahmacharis and to give dignity to the congregation, the marriage board has worked wonderfully. Just this last year, I think there were 18 marriages that were... They don't arrange, they just facilitate. We also have a board for the children. And these people, the grihasthas, just become so incredibly enthusiastic because they have responsibility. And they have good sadhana, so they're actually spiritually quite strong. So they just come up with more ideas. They run a Sunday school, and as of July 1st of this year, we don't have a... As of July 1st this year, they're starting a school, an academic school, only for the children of the congregation, something we never had. The first year, we have nursery, junior kindergarten, and senior kindergarten. That's how we're starting. Because even the schools in India, there's so much pollution that come to these small children. And they have it planned out, so next year it will go up to fourth grade, the next year eighth grade, and within 3 years it will go all the way through high school. A state-accredited, perfectly legitimate school for devotee children. And that's very possible because we have quite a few young devotees who are studying education in college. And they'll actually be approved, accredited, and well-trained teachers. And they're sincere devotees, so it'll be a devotee school. This is just an example of how when the grihasthas take responsibility and feel the empowerment of leaders, how they can just create so many wonderful projects for the future of our society. We also have a department for caring for the older people, because we have all ages. Quite a few of our devotees are in their 60s and they've retired. And what will their future be? So devotees are trying to create a farm community where there will be a vanaprastha ashram, where people could serve according to their capacity and be cared for as far as their health, and have simple facilities to live, have nice association, and they could live through their life and ultimately die engaged in devotional service. Young people will know that when they're older, we see it. There's a place, this family, this society of devotees are going to take care of me for my whole life, if I'm just sincere to be Krishna conscious. There's about 15 such subcommittees that for every possible way we feel devotees need support and help in different phases of their life, we try to create a sangam of devotees who are developing projects.